This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's February 3rd, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures in Williamsville, Illinois. In agricultural news, the U.S. is working to reach a bilateral trade agreement with South Korea. That doesn't sound so great, but it is the U.S. seventh largest trading partner. And tons of U.S. beef are in cold storage without a home out on the open seas. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then we'll hear all about the Excel spreadsheets you can download for free from the FarmDoc website. They're in the fast tools sections. Oh yeah, don't forget, we'll check the weekend weather forecast across the Midwest with the folks at the Illinois State Water Survey. That'll happen just after the bottom of the hour on this Friday afternoon edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The March wheat at 356.5, up 9.25. May futures at 367.75 at the Chicago Board of Trade, up 9.25 as well. March wheat in Kansas City at $4.115, up 8.75 today. From the corn pit in Chicago, March contract at 225.25, up 4.75. May at 235, up 4.75. In July, up 4.75 today. They finished at $2.44 a bushel. Your new crop, December, $2.60 even, up 3.25. March soybeans up 10.75 today at $5.94.75. The May at $6.07.5, up 10.75. July futures 10.5 higher, $6.17.5, the settlement price there. And November is at 9.5 cents higher, finished at $6.30.5 a bushel. Bean meal futures, March contract up $2.10. $184 the settlement price, and the March bean oil at $22.66, up 71 from the Mercantile Exchange. March feeder cattle at 107.82.5, they were down 87.5 cents. February live cattle off 32.5 at 92.27.5, and the Feb lean hogs today settled at $55.02, they were up 47.5 cents.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
And joining us now to take a look at the future market is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. What a wild day, fun day. What a great week at the Chicago Board of Trade this week, Mike.
Yeah, it was tough on the meat guys, but pretty good for the grain guys.
It was an interesting week. And tell me, let's start in the bean pit, where today's move was up 10 cents. It was a pretty rough week earlier in the week. And they still managed to gain, let's see, on the weeklies, I think about 4 or 5, 6 cents in the beans. Let's see, March contract up 5.5. The Novembers were up 9.5 on the week. So the weekly trade was higher as well. But I think it's an inside trading week compared to last week.
Yeah, and, it's a neat week when it comes to the beans. They told us a lot, we think, Todd, when it came to how they traded, that they really had some upside, and they're still maintaining a pretty wide range and a pretty big boundary between support and resistance. But they do have a catalyst to be shorts to cover and longs to come in if the wheat and the corn are maintaining these gains. And so we felt like Wednesday was a key day where the wheat and the corn didn't do so well and the beans kind of were left on their own, and we saw some rain come into Argentina, and we had a pretty big down day. And that's something to sock away, we think, in the back of our heads going into the next few weeks, because we think it'll get harder and harder and harder without dry weather or rust or massive Chinese buying. Supply and demand fundamentals need to come in and change in order to take away some of the future pain of maybe the new crop South American harvest coming down the pike, as well as, pretty ample supplies that will, in the United States, that will probably be refocused upon by the trade when we get up against the monthly USDA supply and demand report coming up the middle of the month, and then when we get into first notice day time period at the end of the month. So our position would be, from this point of 630 NOV beans and near $6 March beans, it would be pretty hard to continue to follow to the upside of this degree the wheat and the corn if you're in the bean market. And the Gulf prices are already starting to show quite a bit of weakness. And today they were down. Basis has widened on this futures rally.
Yeah, that brings me to the next question. And I had a couple of questions, whether you think the corn or the wheat is actually the lead in this marketplace. And then can both of those continue to move higher in the face of a soybean market that may not trail along with them?
Yeah, the corn is the lead from a psychological standpoint of how the traders are looking at the index funds, like the Deutsche Bank fund. We had another record open interest number reported by the Board of Trade this morning of just under 1 million contracts open interest in corn futures. And so in that respect, when you look at and follow open interest, corn tends to be a leader in the traders' minds that follow open interest. But, you know, when you look at the big picture fundamentals and the currencies and interest rates and who has been short so heavily and aggressively that are now getting squeezed out, well, we would still put our money on the wheat as far as being the leader to the upside. It was pretty interesting to note that the Kansas City wheat, it went to 416 in the March contract today for a high. That took out a May 31, 2004 high. You know, we're talking about a two-year high just about, and now we've got the May 2004 high from a couple weeks prior to that. A 420 is next resistance. So when you look at the big picture chart, that clearly the wheat has done a much more aggressive, you know, run to the upside, taking out historical year and two-year levels, and in Chicago, you know, 7-8 month levels where corn and beans haven't been able to do that.
Fundamentally, on the world market, are we short enough of supply, or is the ratio to supply to usage supporting the kind of run that you've seen in the wheat market?
It's a really, really key point. It's historically tight when you look at the last 10 years, and it probably would not be as big a deal to the trade if you didn't have India, Ukraine, and the United States all having an issue, and then you throw on top of that Argentina and both their wheat and their corn crops being a little bit, you know, curbed by this, and maybe more than a little bit curbed by this recent dry pattern that they're just getting out of, it's probably a situation where the market's building a risk premium in, assuming more a worst-case scenario coming down the pike by USDA and putting that risk premium in the market ahead of time. And that's you hit a really key point here, Todd. You can't really market in this environment thinking that if a farmer knows something that's friendly, like it's dry in South, you know, South Kansas and North Texas, if a farmer knows that now, producers know that now, the trade more than likely already has that in the price. And so we really are kind of setting ourselves up, we think, for a buy the rumor, sell the fact type market once we get technically overdone and once we get to points where you see a lot of resistance and a lot of new selling come in. And where's that at? I would suspect that 30 to 50 cents from here in Kansas City wheat is going to bring a lot of resistance into the market. You're talking about a three-year high and three-year price levels that, you know, are pretty historic in that respect. And you're going to have to continue to have dry weather probably to propel this market higher than that.
You mentioned three places, and I think I understand all three of them. Well, two of the three, but I'm not sure about India, in fact.
No one is.
In the United States, it's the dry areas of the Southwest. In Russia, I assume it's the cold and probably winter kill potentially from a couple of weeks ago. But I'm not certain that I've heard too much about India at this point.
India is a strange issue because what it sounds like to us and what little bit we know about it is that they got caught with no stocks coming into their harvest in the March, April, May time period, that they're looking at a pretty good crop for their new crop wheat, but they literally don't have enough to supply their domestic market to get them through. And they came in and made an import request for 500,000 tons. We think Australia probably got that. But the point is that why would they let their stocks run so low that they couldn't literally get down 3 or 4 months down the pike before their new crop is harvested? And what that did, what pushed the government to import, was that their prices were spiraling out of control in India. And you know, you had other countries such as Egypt and some of the other major importers really banking on a strong European harvest and low prices, and the European prices, especially the French prices and the Ukrainian prices. Black Sea market has really been going up, 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 and up because of this cold snap they've had there. So those are the things that probably put more upside potential in the market if they continue along with our southern plains weather.
All right, now down to the nuts and bolts. On the soy, are you ready to make new crop sales?
Well, we're sitting at about 25% on both new crop corn and new crop beans, and we have people that have some options underneath them from lower levels. We have some that elected not to do that. What we're saying right now is by the time, if we would get to 280 December corn before planting, if we get to the old contract highs of November beans of 660 before planting, we'd want to be 100% hedged of anticipated production in both those commodities. And we're going to use a lot of puts this year because we don't want to oversell, especially in the corn, cash bushels. So we're going to do a scale-up approach. Each individual is probably going to be a little bit different, especially this year, because there's a lot of producers that have turned very, very friendly this market, very, very bullish, wondering if they should cancel some open orders at 265 or not. And so it's going to be a tough year. We can tell that already.
It's always tough when you're at that kind of sales and you're looking, whether it's 100% or 200%, depending on what happens with
there you go, exactly.
With your yields, right? So
you bet.
So that's why the options are there. All right, anything else to add before we let you go? Maybe touch on the meats for me.
Yeah, you know, you had a tough week this week, but the hogs came back around on the close. The cattle, you hit it on your pre-opening commentary about the issue of this meat sitting out in the ocean without a home. That's just psychologically negative, and the traders aren't going to buy this market, but you've got some pretty good fundamentals building up in the hogs. You're a little bit tighter at the packer level. The wholesale market's been hit by cheap chicken prices, and so you might be able to see a little bit of a recovery in the hogs next week, we're hoping.
We appreciate you being with us today, Mike.
Thanks, Todd. Have a real nice weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzulos with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with the state climatologist. His name is Jim Angel from the Illinois State Water Survey. Mike Sola from right here in WILL Radio. Forecast for the two-state region tonight looks like this. In northern and central sections this evening, cloudy, some occasional snow, showers, some flurries. In northern and west central Indiana, mostly cloudy, rain mixed with snow. In east central Indiana, he says it'll be mostly cloudy, a few showers there. In the south, mostly cloudy, lows ranging tonight from 18 in far northwestern Illinois to 34 in southeastern Indiana. Tomorrow, Mike says, in eastern Indiana, it'll be cloudy, some snow showers. In western Indiana and eastern Illinois, mostly cloudy, some scattered snow showers, a few flurries. In western Illinois, mostly cloudy. Highs will range tomorrow from 26 in the north to 41 in the far south. Dave Dickey's here now with the news.
In agricultural news, South Korea decided yesterday it would begin talks with the U.S. toward reaching a bilateral free trade agreement. The decision came at a meeting of cabinet ministers in charge of the economy yesterday evening. The Bush administration considers South Korea a key nation for striking a free trade deal. It's the U.S.'s seventh largest trading partner, with two-way trade of $61 billion in 2003. Such a pact would be the biggest for the U.S. since NAFTA in 1994. Tons and tons of U.S. beef is beginning to pile up at Japanese ports following the country's decision to reimpose a ban on imports on January 20th. Jay Truitt, Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
We've got nearly 100 containers of beef that we have to figure out somewhere for them to go. They left the United States and they're on ships headed towards that direction. So we've been working pretty aggressively trying to make sure that that product doesn't return and come back here, that we find another home for it somewhere. That's been a little bit of a difficult chore.
U.S. exporters had loaded more than 2,000 tons of U.S. beef on ships heading to Japan when trade was resumed in December following a two-year hiatus. Representatives of Japanese meat importers say they should not be held liable for the costs involved with the backed-up shipments because the fault rests with a U.S. meat company and with USDA for the failure of its inspector to detect banned spinal material. U.S. beef on the Japanese docks is valued at nearly $20 million. Meanwhile, the U.S. envoy to Japan today says he expects to present within a week or so results of a USDA investigation into how banned bone was shipped. An inspector general's report says the USDA has some tweaking to do in its mad cow testing and prevention program. The report listed 22 recommendations for APHIS and the Food Safety Inspection Service, among them that testing protocols need to be better spelled out, as there have been cases in which USDA inspectors either failed to look for downer animals at meatpacking plants or allowed downer animals to be slaughtered. The IG also says it can't tell if USDA's expanded BSE surveillance program is actually determining how safe is U.S. beef. The IG says the voluntary nature of the program makes it impossible to know if USDA is testing a representative sample of cattle at high risk for mad cow disease. Meanwhile, at the Cattle Industry Convention in Denver, NCBA incoming President Mike John unveiled a new long-range plan with two ambitious goals.
One of the first ones, and the most immediate, is to increase the pounds of exported product from 1 billion pounds that we're probably going to do in 2005 to 3 billion pounds by 2010. Another goal is to increase demand by 10% by 2010. And if you remember, our previous long-range plan said we were going to increase consumer demand by 6% at the end of 2004, and we beat that more than fourfold at 25%. So these are goals that are achievable, and again, if we meet those goals, we'll be an incredibly successful industry.
The Cattle Industry Convention wraps up Saturday. An Indianapolis-based company is the latest to make plans to build multi-million-dollar ethanol plants in Indiana. Maize AgriProducts is studying sites in Benton County for its project. The plant would produce 50 million gallons of corn-based fuel a year and employ about 35 people. Indiana's only ethanol plant is in South Bend, but four more are under construction, and at least four other plants have been proposed. The top Democrat on the Senate Ag Committee, Iowa's Tom Harkin, says when it comes to renewable energy, the president isn't putting his money where his mouth is.
For sure, I strongly support the president's goal. Based on past experience, I'm skeptical of his intention to make good on his pledge. 4 years ago, when he signed the Farm Bill, President Bush strongly praised its renewable energy provisions. But since then, he has failed to implement or has slashed funding for many of those very initiatives. And get this, according to yesterday's Washington Post, present budget for 2007 provides only an additional $59 million for cellulosic ethanol research, provides only an additional $5 million for wind energy. These numbers are totally inadequate.
Harkin made his remarks during a teleconference with ag journalists Thursday. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That program comes to you tomorrow morning at 11:30 a.m. Central Time. Our guest, Glenn Ring. If you can't wait, you can pick it up off our website after about 6 o'clock this evening. The address is www.willuc.edu. Just click on AM. And then agriculture. Up next, the vast tools section of the FarmDoc website has been updated. Now farmers and others should find that page a little easier to use. It means the spreadsheets prepared by the ag economist at the University of Illinois will be easier to download and update. There are 40 Excel spreadsheets in the University of Illinois stable of agricultural finance tools. Each offers farmers and agribusinesses a way to assess performance on the farm. Travis Farley is an Extension Fast Tools Specialist. He explains how the 40 spreadsheets are divided into 7 categories.
Well, we look at 7 categories of farm business analysis. We range from financial analysis to where we're looking at preparing financial statements, items you hand to your lender, to developing a cash flow plan. We also look at investment analysis, where we analyze making capital investments. You know, should you build that grain bin, or should you go out and buy that tract of land? Then we also have a grain management section where we have a tool there that will help you track your grain inventories and literally manage every bushel of grain from yield to sale.
FAST stands for Farm Analysis Solutions Tools. It's a suite of Microsoft Excel spreadsheets designed to assist those in agriculture make better decisions via user-friendly computer programs. FAST aids users in performing financial analysis, assessing investment decisions, and evaluating the impacts of various management decisions, says Travis Farley.
In our risk management feature, we've added some crop insurance tools. So on the FarmDoc website, we have a crop insurance section that has some internet-based tools. Well, we've now converted all those into Microsoft Excel spreadsheets and included them on the FAST tools section. So rather than being required to go online to use some of these crop insurance tools, you can now download them.
Those who do will need a copy of the computer program Microsoft Excel version 97 or later for most of the tools. They'll all work on Excel 2000 or later. The spreadsheets are popular, with downloads through the end of 2005 approaching 20,000. The most often downloaded files include one analyzing whether or not it is financially worthwhile to build a grain bin for on-farm storage. The FAST Tools spreadsheets are located on the FarmDoc website. The address is www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. For the University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Some people think that public radio is fully funded by Congress. Not true. In fact, nearly half of our annual income comes directly from our listeners. Without your support, WILL would not be able to operate. So, if you enjoy what you hear, please help pay for what you enjoy.
I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. We're now joined by Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures at the Williamsville Farmers Co-op. He's in Williamsville, Illinois. That's not too terribly far north of Springfield. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about the basis levels both going to the river and then to Decatur.
Both have slid a little bit this week. Corn at the river basically steadied a slightly easier. Gulf numbers are up a little bit, but barge freight has been high enough to offset that. Kind of a self-defeating circle here on the river. Whenever you see cash movement, you get barge freight offsetting it to kind of throttle it back. Beans at the river down 5 cents. Processor side taking a hit. We were down 2 cents through the week through yesterday, down another 2 cents today, so 4 cents last Friday. And beans have lost 4 cents also.
Tell me a little bit more about the barge freight, because we haven't taken that up for several weeks here with you on the river. I think we were running after Katrina really high at that 800%, and generally it runs like 300%. Where are we today?
Spot barges on the Illinois River about 420%, something for the tail end of February, maybe 370% of tariff. 360 for March. They're telling me there's a lot of freight being used for northbound fertilizer loads. It's taking a while to get that offloaded. Then they have to get the barges all cleaned out and ready to go for grain. And since the fertilizer loads pay better, grain kind of takes the back seat until they're ready.
And then cash movement in your area, farmers willing sellers for the beans or the corn this week?
Beans have been very quiet. Corn, we've seen some movement, not nearly as heavy as last week, mostly old crop movement, although I was talking to some other elevators in the eastern part of the state today, and sounds like they were having some pretty heavy new crop sales today.
Are you surprised at all that the old crop beans haven't come out of the bin?
I would say not really. We saw some cash movement in December on the rally. Flat price numbers right now are below where we were then, so we haven't seen new high ground, and that seems to keep the beans standing on the sideline. Corn-wise, I think the reason I'm not seeing as much cash movement right now is with the processor basis backing off a little bit, we didn't really see new highs until today. So I kind of expect my cash movement to pick up in the next 2.5 hours.
Your bids for the day are?
We are at 202 nearby corn and 560 on beans.
Bruce, thanks much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures out of the Williamsville Farmers Co-op in Williamsville, Illinois. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest with Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey. Your local newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. A lawyer says Maurice Legrone Jr. will be his own first defense witness in his upcoming trial on charges he drowned three children in Clinton Lake. Attorney Jeff Justice says his client is ready to testify and will explain what happened. Both Justice and prosecutors today told a DeWitt County judge that they're ready for the trial, set to begin February 21st in Bloomington. A state task force aimed at combating the emerald ash borer in Illinois meets next Friday in Chicago to review strategy. The emerald ash borer has destroyed ash trees in Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana. And the emerald ash borer readiness team will be taking a fresh look at the readiness plan developed 2 years ago to respond to any outbreak of the insect in Illinois. Any sightings of the emerald ash borer in Illinois should be reported to a local extension or state forestry office. Community groups in Indiana say they're running out of federal funds for heating assistance. The Indiana Community Action Association says more people are requesting help as utilities take advantage of unseasonably warm weather to disconnect people who haven't paid their bills. Two ConAgra Foods plants are expected to change hands as the company moves to shed its refrigerated meats business. The proposed sales involve the ConAgra plants in the Illinois towns of Peru and St. Charles, in addition to operations in nine other states. A longtime Charleston businessman and his wife have donated $500,000 to help renovate the old main building at Eastern Illinois University. Max and Mary Kogel attended classes at Old Main while students at EIU. Their contribution will help pay for restoration of the first floor foyer and hallway of the 107-year-old building. Nearly 500 gamers are expected in Champaign this weekend for the 33rd annual Winter Wargaming Convention. The event is billed as the largest of its kind in Illinois, attracting players of Dungeons & Dragons, Magic the Gathering, and other board games, miniature games, and role-playing games. Convention coordinator Don McKinney says convention attendance has grown in the last few years with an influx of new, younger players. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. We're joined now by Jim Angel, the state climatologist here at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Good afternoon to you, Jim.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about weather in the Midwest, what it's been like over the past week, what we can expect in the coming week.
Yeah, if you look at the weather in the past week or so, in fact, for the last month, it's been near record warmth. In fact, Illinois was at its second warmest January on record since 1895, just one-tenth of a degree behind the all-time record set back in 1933. So it's been uniformly warm across the upper Midwest and Great Lakes states. But that's going to change in the next week. We're going to get back to more seasonable-like conditions with highs in the low 30s and lows in the upper teens and lower 20s, which is about normal for this time of year. And we'll probably see some snow, although it looks like it's a pretty dry system, so I don't think we'll see much accumulation over the weekend. But it'll remain cool and dry probably over the next week or two.
And did rainfalls over the northern part of the state help very much there to alleviate the drought conditions?
Well, apparently so. They had some pretty good rains in the areas that really needed it the most, and in some cases 2 to 3 inches during January. So that has brought up the soil moisture and the stream flows, and all the drought indicators point towards some recovery from the drought. Now, that doesn't mean it's over because they've got a long ways to go. They got some pretty big deficits to overcome up there, but at least they're going in the right direction.
And I have to ask one more question because you mentioned 1933, and I do not recall what the Dust Bowl era was, whether that was 35 and 36 or whether it was as early as 33. Can you tell us about that and whether there's any indication of, you know, the Southwest being that kind of dry?
Oh, yeah. The 1930s in general, we kind of seesawed back and forth between dry years and wet years. And in general, the odd number of years were better than the even numbers. So 30, 32, 34, and 36 were probably the toughest, with probably 36 being the worst of them all. And we are seeing developing drought in the Southwest, especially in Texas, Oklahoma, and New Mexico, that part of the country. And it's extending on up into Arkansas. And that's pretty much a repeat of last year. You know, they were dry down there, and then we kind of got in with that dryness, and then we had a couple of tropical storms roll in there and kind of broke those two sections of the country apart.
Jim, we appreciate you filling in today.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey in today for Steve Hilberg, who is away for the afternoon. That is the Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week. It's our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. Our guest will be Glenn Ring. You can join him tonight, in fact, if you'd like, on our website at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Just click on AM and then, of course, agriculture. Have a very good weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.